Good morning. This is the BBC World News for the 8th of April, 2026, read by Steve Hoff. The top headline today deals with the ceasefire in the war with Iran. Headline, what we know about the two-week ceasefire between the U.S. and Iran. Iran and the United States have agreed to a conditional two-week ceasefire during which shipping traffic will be allowed through the Strait of Hormuz. This comes more than a month after the U.S. and Israel launched coordinated attacks on Iran and hours after U.S. President Donald Trump threatened, quote, a whole civilization will die tonight, end quote, if Iran did not reopen the strait. Pakistan's Prime Minister, Shahbaz Sharif, who has been mediating negotiations, said earlier on Wednesday that the ceasefire was effective immediately. Here's what we know so far about the deal. Trump said he had agreed to, quote, suspend the bombing and attack on Iran for a period of 2 weeks, end quote, if Tehran agreed to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, a vital shipping route for oil and other exports from the Gulf. In a post on Truth Social, Trump said he agreed to the provisional ceasefire because, quote, we have already met and exceeded all military objectives, end quote. This comes after he earlier warned the United States could take Iran out in a night, quote, end quote, and that a whole civilization will die tonight, never to be brought back again. Threats that drew condemnation from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres and Pope Leo XIV. Later on Wednesday, Trump said that the U.S. will be working closely with Iran and, quote, talking tariff and sanction relief, end quote. On his Truth Social platform, he added in a separate post that, quote, a country supplying military weapons to Iran will be immediately tariffed on any and all goods sold to the United States of America. 50% effective immediately. There will be no exclusions or exemptions, end quote. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said the U.S. military will be making sure Iran complies with the ceasefire and comes to the table for a deal. Troops will, quote, stay put, stay ready, stay vigilant, and be ready to restart at a moment's notice, he added. Iran has agreed to allow vessels through the Hormuz Straits for 2 weeks, with their passage coordinated by the Iranian military. The country has also issued a 10-point plan, which includes, among other things, the complete cessation of war in Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, and Yemen. Quote, full commitment to lifting sanctions on Iran, the release of Iranian funds and frozen assets held by the United States, and a, quote, full payment of compensation for reconstruction costs to Iran. It also says, quote, Iran fully commits to not seeking possession of any nuclear weapons, end quote. Quote, Iran's victory in the field would also be consolidated in political negotiations Tehran's Supreme National Security Council said in a statement. According to Sharif, the ceasefire will also take effect in Lebanon, where Israel has been fighting the Iranian-backed armed group Hezbollah. Israel has backed the deal, but says it does not include Lebanon, renewing strikes on Wednesday in the Tyre and Nabathis areas in the south of the country. Sirens sounded in Israel shortly after Trump's announcement, with the Israeli Defense Forces saying they were intercepting missiles launched from Iran. Several loud booms were heard in Jerusalem late on Tuesday night. A few hours after the ceasefire was confirmed, Netanyahu said, quote, Israel supports President Trump's decision to suspend strikes against Iran for 2 weeks, subject to Iran immediately opening the straits and stopping all attacks on the U.S., Israel, and countries in the region, end quote. The statement added that the ceasefire does not include Lebanon, where Israel has ground troops. It is unclear how involved Netanyahu was in Trump's decision-making. So what's next? Pakistan, which has been mediating the negotiations, has invited the delegations to meet in Islamabad on Friday, quote, to further negotiate for a conclusive agreement to settle all disputes, end quote. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt acknowledged ongoing discussions about in-person talks, but said, quote, nothing is final until announced by President or the White House. Whatever form they take, negotiations are going to be very difficult. Strikes appeared to be continuing after the ceasefire as Kuwait on Wednesday morning, reported Iranian attacks which damaged power and desalination plants, as well as oil facilities. Quote, Kuwait air defenses have been engaging in an intense wave of hostile Iranian attacks, dealing with 28 drones targeting the state of Kuwait, the country's military said in a statement on X. The U.S. and Iran appear to have contradicting positions on what this ceasefire entails. And Iran and the U.S. have held two rounds of talks in the past year. Both times saw military tensions escalate in the middle of negotiations. The leaders of France, Italy, Germany, Britain, Canada, Denmark, the Netherlands, Spain, and the EU welcomed the ceasefire in a joint statement, urged a, quote, swift and lasting end to the war. Quote, we call upon all sides to implement the ceasefire, including in Lebanon, they said. In a related headline, oil prices plunge and shares jump on U.S.-Iran ceasefire plan. Global oil prices have fallen sharply and stock markets soared after U.S. and Iran agreed to a conditional 2-week ceasefire deal that includes the reopening of the key Strait of Hormuz waterway. The price of benchmark Brent tumbled more than 15% to less than $92 a barrel, while U.S. traded oil fell similarly to just under $94 a barrel. But oil prices remain higher than before the conflict started on the 28th of February. At that time, it was trading at around $70 a barrel. The cost of energy has jumped as oil and gas supplies from the Middle East have been severely disrupted after Iran threatened to attack ships trying to use the strait in retaliation to U.S. and Israeli airstrikes. Stock markets in the U.S. opened higher following sharp rises in Europe and Asia. The Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 jumped more than 2.5%, while the Nasdaq traded up 3.3%. In London, the FTSE 100 share index gained 3% in mid-afternoon trade. In France, the CAC 40 added 4.9%, while Germany's DAX, DAX, rose by more than 5%. The Japanese Nikkei 225 closed up nearly 5.4%, while South Korea's KOSPI jumped more than 6.8%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng ended 3% higher, while the ASX 200 in Australia gained 2.5%. In a social media post on Tuesday evening, Trump said, quote, "I agree to suspend the bombing and attack of Iran for a period of 2 weeks, subject to the Islamic Republic of Iran agreeing to the complete, immediate, and safe opening of the Strait of Hormuz." He had set a deadline for 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Eastern Daily Time, on Tuesday, threatening that a whole civilization will die tonight if no deal was reached. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said on social media that Tehran will agree to a ceasefire, quote, if attacks against Iran are halted, adding that safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz will be possible. More oil tankers stranded near the strait may be able to pass through the waterway during the ceasefire, providing some relief for markets in the coming weeks, said analyst Saul Kovanec from the financial services firm MST Marquis. Despite the conflict, some ships have passed through the Strait of Hormuz, although far fewer than usual. Asian countries, including India, Malaysia, and the Philippines, have negotiated safe passage for their vessels in recent weeks. China has also acknowledged that several of its ships have crossed the strait since the war began. Kovanec said that while the ceasefire is in place, it is still unlikely that energy production in the Middle East will fully resume until there is a confidence of a lasting peace deal. It could also take months for production to restart due to the damage done to energy infrastructure in the region. Iran has targeted energy and industrial infrastructure across the oil-rich region in retaliation to the U.S.-Israel strikes. It could take years to fix the damage and cost more than $25 billion, according to the research firm Rystad Energy. Energy prices jumped in mid-March after strikes on Qatar's Ras Laffan industrial hub, which produces about one-fifth of the world's liquefied natural gas. The hub's owner said the attacks have reduced the country's export capacity by 17%, and that it will take up to 5 years to repair the damage. Asia has been hit particularly hard by the economic fallout of the Iran war, as many countries are heavily reliant on energy from the Gulf. Governments and companies across the region have announced measures in recent weeks to deal with high energy prices and fuel shortages. Many airlines in the region have raised fares and cut flights in response to surging jet fuel prices. Developing countries in Asia have been especially affected by the conflict, as many do not have their own refineries or sufficient oil reserves, said Ichiro Kutani from Japan's Institute of Energy Economics. The ceasefire is good news for Asian countries. If it holds, oil prices will return to normal states, though this will take some time, he said. Next, but also in the Middle East, U.S. journalist Shelley Kittleson released after kidnap in Iraq. A U.S. freelance journalist who was kidnapped in the Iraqi capital of Baghdad a week ago has been released, according to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. The Iranian-backed militia group Kataib Hezbollah said earlier on Tuesday that it would release Shelley Kittleson, who was taken on the 31st of March, on condition that she leave Iraq immediately. Rubio said the release, quote, reflects the Trump administration's steadfast commitment to the safety and security of American citizens, no matter where they are in the world, end quote. He thanked the Iraqi officials for helping to secure her release and said the U.S. is now, quote, working to support her safe departure from Iraq. At the time of the 49-year-old's abduction, the Iraqi government said security forces had chased the subjects in a pursuit that led to one of the kidnappers' cars overturning and the arrest of one person. Last week, Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani ordered security forces to pursue those responsible for abducting foreigners. In a separate post, Asaf said the group would release a recording showing Kittleson's, quote, role and activity in Iraq without providing further details. The abduction came amid ongoing attacks by Iran and its allied Iraqi Shiite militias on U.S.-associated targets across Iraq and the region since the outbreak of the U.S.-Israeli war on Iran. Kittleson's friend and emergency contact, CNN national security analyst Alex Pitsas, I'm not sure how that, I'm sure I'm messing up that name, said he had seen the, quote, alleged statement about her release, but added, we have no official confirmation from the United States government that this is true. It is understood that U.S. officials had contacted Kittleson a number of times before she was kidnapped to warn her of threats against her. Pletus, I think that's how you... previously told CBS, the BBC's U.S. news partner, that Kittleson had been warned by the U.S. government about a specific threat to her from the Iran-backed paramilitaries. He said Kittleson had been told her name was on a list in possession of Kataib Hezbollah, which has said to be plotting to kidnap or kill female journalists. Kittleson, based in Rome, Italy, has covered conflicts in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, according to her bio on X. She has worked for numerous publications. The U.S. State Department has warned citizens not to travel to Iraq. Next headline. Has Artemis II shown we can land on the moon again? NASA's Artemis II mission has passed every major test since its launch on the 1st of April, with its rocket, spacecraft, and crew performing better than engineers had dared to hope for. The mission's first 6 days have shown that the Orion capsule works as designed with people on board for the first time, something no simulator could prove. Perhaps its greatest achievement, though, is through the actions of the Artemis crew, which have generated hope, agency, and optimism for a world appearing to be in desperate need of inspiration. But the bigger question remains, is a moon landing by 2028, as NASA and President Trump want, now really an achievable goal? A few days after NASA's space launch system, the SLS, reached the launch pad at Kennedy Space Center, the most important lesson about Artemis II had already been learned. After two scrubbed launches in February and again in March, because of separate technical issues, NASA Administrator Jared Isaacman said, quote, launching a rocket as important and as complex as the SLS every 3 years is not a path to success. The previously uncrewed Artemis 1 mission took off in November of 2022. The agency, he said, had to stop treating each rocket like a work of art and start launching with the frequency of a program that means serious business. It was, in effect, a declaration that relearning the same lessons every 3 years had to stop. That matters because it reframes everything that has followed. And judged against that ambition, what has the mission shown us in the last 6 days since Reid Wiseman, Victor Grover, Christina Nock, and Jeremy Hansen lifted off on the 1st of April? The short answer is more, even more than the optimist dared hope for. The SLS generated 8.8 million pounds of thrust at liftoff, and by every measure engineers care about, performed to plan. Each phase of the ascent was, in the understated language of mission control, quote, nominal. Maximum dynamic pressure, main engine cutoff, and booster separation. Two of the three planned course corrections on the way to the moon were scrapped because the trajectory was already so accurate they were not needed. As Dr. Simeon Barber, space scientist at the Open University, put it, quote, credit to them, they got it right the first time. A day after the launch came a critical moment. Orion fired its main engine with 5 minutes and 55 seconds, known as the translunar injection burn, putting the spacecraft on a looping path to the moon, with no further major maneuvers required. The powerful engine burn was, quote, flawless, according to the head of the Artemis program. The official purpose of the mission is to put people inside the Orion and find out what happens, not just to the spacecraft, but to the interaction between crew and machine. What has unfolded is precisely what was anticipated, and precisely what could not have been learned in a simulator. There have been toilet problems, a water dispenser issue requiring the crew to bag water as a precaution, a minor redundancy loss in one of the helium systems was mentioned at an earlier press conference and quietly resolved. As Barber observed, quote, "This is all about putting humans in the loop. These pesky humans that press buttons and breathe carbon dioxide and want air conditioning and want to use the toilet. It was all about how the system works with those guys on board," end quote. The engineers monitoring Orion's CO2 removal system through back-to-back exercise sessions or testing how the spacecraft handles with thrusters deliberately disabled are building the case that this vehicle is safe enough to carry people to the surface of the moon. Barber's overall assessment was direct. Quote, "Orion itself seemed to have worked pretty well. Actually, certainly all the propulsion stuff, which is the real critical stuff. NASA has talked up the scientific returns. The crew made extensive observations during their flyby around 35 geological features noted in real time, color variations that could reveal mineral composition, and a solar eclipse from deep space that pilot Victor Glover said, quote, "just looks unreal." One image stood out. The Oriental Basin, a 600-mile crater near the moon's far side, seen in full by human eyes for the first time. And yet, the science is not the main point. Professor Chris Lennott of Oxford, co-host of The Sky at Night, was blunt. Quote, "The artistic value of the images returned from Artemis and its crew is significant, but their scientific value is limited." End quote. India's Chandrayaan-3 landed near the South Pole in 2023. China's Chang'e 6 retrieves samples from the far side of the moon in 2024. Robotic probes have mapped this terrain in extraordinary detail. The most affecting moment came not from any instrument, but from the crew, as the astronaut broke the distance record set by the stricken Apollo 13 crew in 1970, mission specialist Jeremy Hansen called down to mission control in Houston. "There was a crater," he said, "on the near side, far side boundary, a bright spot to the northwest of Glushko Crater." Quote, "We've lost a loved one," his voice thickening. "Her name was Carol, the spouse of Reed, the mother of Katie and Ellie, and we would like to call it the crater, Carol." 45 seconds of silence followed. Commander Reed Weissman wept. The crew embraced. Back on Earth, his daughters were watching from Houston. That moment matters for reasons beyond sentiment. Space programs that cannot generate genuine, unscripted human emotion do not survive long. The real reason Apollo endures in cultural memory is not solely the engineering. It is what was said about human reach and courage. Artemis II, at that moment, made the same claim. The biggest test is still to come. The mission is not over. Orion is heading home, due to splash down in the Pacific Ocean near San Diego on the 11th of April. What remains is re-entry into the Earth's atmosphere, the moment that causes so much anxiety after Artemis 1, when an unexpected heat shield damage triggered an investigation that delayed this mission by more than a year. The Orion capsule will hit the atmosphere at roughly 25,000 miles per hour. That is a test no simulator can replicate, and its outcome will define this mission's legacy more than any image of the moon's far side. If re-entry goes well, the picture that emerges from Artemis II will be genuinely encouraging. The rocket work, the spacecraft work, the crew handled the systems with competence and grace, and NASA has at last articulated a credible plan to build on this moment rather than wait 3 years and start all over. The moon landing by 2028 remains a stretch. Barber's instinct is that it is more like 3 to 4 years away, and that judgment is hard to argue with. But the smoothness of this mission, from launch to lunar flyby, has shifted the probability in the right direction. The question is no longer whether Orion can fly. The question is whether the landers, the cadence, and the political will can keep pace. The spacecraft, at least, has done its part. Artemis II is a story of inspiration and a story of science. The events of last night had echoes of the Apollo program. At a time when the world has not enough optimism, just as there was so little in the 1960s with wars across the world and civil unrest at home in the United States, this was a moment in time when we could put for one night, remember what we are, and that we are one. We can see a picture of the Earth. This is not the end of the story by any means. This is just a test flight for an eventual landing on the moon. Not just one, but many more to come. Well, we have the rest of the world to report on. First, from the UK. Starmer arrives in Saudi Arabia after U.S.-Iran ceasefire deal. Sir Keir Starmer has arrived in Saudi Arabia as he visits Gulf allies after the U.S.-Iran agreed to a two-week ceasefire. The prime minister is expected to, quote, discuss diplomatic efforts to support and uphold the ceasefire, according to number 10. He will return to the U.K. on Friday. Sir Keir said, quote, I welcome the ceasefire agreement reached overnight, which will bring a moment of relief to the region and to the world. He added, together with our partners, we must do all we can to support and sustain this ceasefire, turn it into a lasting agreement, and reopen the Straits of Hormuz. Sir Keir is also expected to meet UK military personnel in the region as part of his Gulf trip, which was planned before the ceasefire announcement. For the Conservatives' shadow housing secretary, Sir James Cleverly told BBC Breakfast the ceasefire is an, quote, opportunity for Iran to make some serious choices about how it behaves at home and abroad. Former Foreign Secretary Sir James said the war was initiated to ensure Iran, quote, never acquires a nuclear weapon, and that remains an absolute priority, adding, so we welcome this two-week ceasefire, but it is time that mustn't be wasted. Liberal Democrat leader Sir Ed Davey welcomed the ceasefire but questioned whether the UK could trust Trump, labeling him a totally unreliable ally. Sir Ed said the Strait of Hormuz needed to be opened, otherwise people will, quote, pay a heavy price in inflation and lower growth, adding, so whatever it takes, but I do think we've got to stand up to America. America has caused this problem, so we've got to work with allies who we can trust. Next, temperatures reach 26 degrees centigrade on the warmest day of the year so far. Temperatures on Wednesday afternoon have soared to 26 degrees centigrade, which is the equivalent of 78.8 degrees Fahrenheit, making it the warmest day of the year so far. Recorded at Heathrow Airport, London, it exceeded the 24.8 degrees recorded on Tuesday at Mona in Ainslie, Wales, which was briefly the warmest day of the year. Across England and Wales, more widely temperatures have been seen within the high teens and low 20s, accompanied by sunny skies and very high pollen levels. However, make the most of this unusually warm weather, because on Thursday, all will change and things will feel cooler. Let's move on to Africa. First headline, Cameroon military contractors, quote unquote, killed in Russia-Ukraine war. The BBC confirms leaked message. 16 Cameroonians have been killed fighting for Russia in Ukraine, the BBC has confirmed after a foreign ministry source verified that a recently leaked diplomatic note circulating on social media about the deaths was authentic. The government has faced criticism over its prolonged silence on the issue, and this marks the first recognition of the involvement of its nationals in the conflict. A recent report by All Eyes on Wagner, a group that investigates mercenary activities worldwide, said 94 Cameroonians had died in the war between 2023 and 2025. The leaked note from Cameroon's foreign ministry to the Russian embassy described the 16 who had died as, quote, military contractors. Attempts to contact the Russian embassy about the note, which was dated the 5th of March, were unsuccessful. Ukrainian intelligence estimates that more than 1,700 individuals from 36 African nations have been recruited to fight for Russia. Cameroon still has not acknowledged the deaths in an official statement. However, on Monday, a statement from the foreign ministry was sent to the statement. The state broadcaster, CRTV, listing the names of the 16 Cameroonians it said were residents in Russia. Several African nations have sought to address the worrying number of their nationals being lured to fight for Russia. Ghana is among those which has urged Russia to stop recruiting combatants. The West African nation says at least 55 Ghanaians had been killed fighting in the war. In February, Kenya's foreign ministry told the BBC that more than 600 recruitment agencies suspected of duping Kenyans with promises of jobs abroad had been closed. 16 Kenyans are said to have been missing in Russia, while 47 others have returned home from the front in Ukraine. Zimbabwe says 15 nationals have been killed after being recruited, and more than 60 people are still trapped on the front lines. Earlier this year, South Africa repatriated 17 citizens who they said had been trapped in Ukraine's Donbas region after being deceived into fighting for Russia. From Asia, this headline: top Australian soldier charged with war crimes to remain in jail on remand. Ben Robert Smith, Australia's most decorated living soldier, will remain behind bars after his lawyers did not seek bail over charges of alleged war crimes in Afghanistan. Robert Smith, 47 years old, was arrested at Sydney Airport on Tuesday and charged with 5 counts of the war crime of murder before being transferred to a police cell. On Wednesday, lawyers for the Victoria Cross recipient did not immediately apply for bail. Robert Smith denies all wrongdoing, previously calling the claims egregious. The criminal case comes after a defamation judgment in 2023 found the former corporal in Australia's Special Air Service Regiment, the SAS, killed several unarmed Afghans between the years 2009 and 2012. The years-long defamation proceedings initiated by Robert Smith marked the first time in history that any court had examined claims of war crimes by Australian forces. Robert Smith's lawyers argued that the alleged killings were either legal, as they took place during combat, or did not happen at all. Defamation cases are typically dealt with in a civil court system, which requires a lower burden of proof. The judge in the defamation case found that, on the balance of probabilities, there was substantial truth to the allegations of war crimes by Robert Smith, who received Australia's highest military honor for bravery in 2011. In the criminal case, Robert Smith faces one charge of a war crime of murder, one of jointly commissioning a murder, and three of aiding, abetting, and counseling or procuring a murder. The maximum penalty for the charges is life in prison. Earlier, the Australian Federal Police, the AFP, confirmed the case had involved a complex and thorough investigation. Quote, it will be alleged the victims were shot by the accused or shot by a subordinate members of the ADF, the Australian Defence Force, in the presence of and acting on the orders of the accused. She added that the allegations of misconduct were confined to a very small section of the ADF, and that the majority of the country's armed forces do our country proud. Robert Smith is due back in court on the 17th of April and will appear via a video link. British teen dies in reported Vietnam motorbike fall. A beautiful, independent, and very funny British teenager has died in a road accident in Vietnam. local media reported, 19-year-old Orla Watts from London was traveling the Hangaon Loop in northern Vietnam when she fell from the back of a motorcycle. She was in Southeast Asia on a gap year before starting a year at Dunham University. Vietnam News said she was taken to Hanoi's Viet Duc Friendship Hospital, and she died on the 2nd of April with her parents at her bedside. Her parents said, quote, Orla had a sharp wit and lived the life to the fullest. Orla had three siblings and was the daughter of Andrew Watts, the director of the multi-billion pound family-owned construction firm, the Watts Group. Her mother, Henrietta Watts, said the family had chosen to donate her organs to the hospital to help others. We believe that if there was a way to give opportunity to others, this is what Orla would have wanted. The Hangaon Loop is the name given to a road trip approximately 217 miles long through the mountains of North Vietnam. Many tour operators suggest riding on the back of a motorcycle with a local guide at the helm, particularly for inexperienced riders. Vietnam is notorious for dangerous roads, with more than 10,000 people killed and 16,000 injured in traffic accidents in 2024. Moving on to Europe. Greece to ban social media for under 15s from next year. Greece has announced plans to ban access to social media for under 15s, becoming the latest European country to restrict children's exposure to online platforms. The Prime Minister said the move was aimed at tackling rising anxiety and sleep problems among young people, as well as what he described as the addictive design of social media. The restriction will come into force from January of next year. In December, Australia became the first country in the world to require TikTok, YouTube, and Snapchat and other sites to remove accounts held by under 16 years or face heavy fines. France, Austria, and Spain are among a growing number of nations pursuing similar curbs. The UK government has launched a consultation on whether to implement a ban for under 16s, while Ireland and Denmark are considering similar measures. Next, French couple leave Iran after more than 3 years in jail. A French couple who spent more than 3 years in an Iranian prison on espionage charges are on their way home, French President Emmanuel Macron says. Cecile Kohler, 41 years old, and Jacques Paris, 72 years old, were arrested during a tourist trip in May of 2022 on spying charges that France said were baseless and held in Tehran's notorious Evin prison. They were freed in November and had been under house arrest at the French embassy in the Iranian capital of Tehran ever since. This is a relief for all of us, and obviously for their families, Macron posted on X. On Tuesday, he also thanked Oman for its mediation efforts. In October, an Iranian court sentenced Paris to 17 years, and Kohler, 20 years for allegedly spying for France and Israel. They were released after Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said a deal to exchange French detainees for an Iranian woman was nearly complete. Iran said at the time that Kohler and Paris could be released as part of that agreement, but the French government did not confirm the existence of such an arrangement. The Iranian woman was convicted in February for glorifying terrorism in social media posts. The Iranian authorities repeatedly said she had been held unjustly since her arrest in France in February of 2025. The French government has not commented on what was agreed to, but spoke of the, quote, long-term work that the foreign ministry teams carried out to achieve this result. A headline from Latin America, co-founder of the Jalisco New Generation Drug Cartel pleads guilty. The co-founder of the Mexican-based Jalisco New Generation Cartel, Eric Valencias Salazar, has pleaded guilty to drug trafficking charges the U.S. Department of Justice has announced. Valencia Salazar, known as L85, was captured by the Mexican Army in 2022 in the state of Jalisco and was among a group of 29 alleged drug lords extradited to the United States in February of 2025 to stand trial. The Drug Enforcement Administration said Valencias Salazar helped build the cartel into a ruthless organization that uses violence as a business model, murdering for control in Mexico while flooding the United States with poisoning. His sentencing is scheduled for the 31st of July. The mandatory minimum sentence is 10 years in prison. The Jalisco New Generation Cartel is one of the most powerful criminal organizations founded in Mexico. In February, its members unleashed a wave of violence across 20 Mexican states after news spread that its leader, Nemesio Oestrogas Cervantes, better known as El Mencho, had died as a result of injuries sustained during his capture by Mexican security forces. So let's finish with how bad smells affect your health. That foul odor wafting your way can do more than make you gag. It could also affect your body and mind. For Elaine Corner, stepping into her garden on a summer's day can be unbearable. She likens it to walking behind an open bin lorry, a garbage truck. Even with all the windows shut in her home in the English market town of Westbury, the retired teacher says she still often can't escape the nausea-inducing stench from a nearby waste treatment plant. We can't use our garden or go for a walk, you feel as though you're going to vomit, says Corner. At some point, we've all been caught the rank waft of decomposing waste as we take out the refuge, drive past a rubbish dump, or encounter a sickly pong from a factory. I think that a sickly pond from a factory. Just imagine living constantly with such a stench. Yet we give little attention to the health and quality of life impacts of such odor pollution. Bad smells can often be dismissed as subjective or trivial. Research shows people typically value their sense of smell less than vision, hearing, touch, and taste. Some U.S. college students have even admitted they would rather lose their sense of smell than their phone. It's not just the discomfort that people experience from living with terrible smells. Studies link unpleasant odors in urban areas to health complaints ranging from headaches and nausea to difficulty breathing or disturbed sleep. They can also have long-lasting mental and physiological effects. A growing body of research is helping us understand the surprising significant role scent plays in the health of our bodies and minds. Odors can have very real effects on people's health and well-being. Scientists have shown that good smells, like the fragrance of a woodland, can be beneficial to our mental health, partly because they stimulate brain regions linked to emotion and memory. There is also evidence that the opposite can be true. With melodious odors damaging our health, although scientists are still trying to disentangle the precise link between odor pollution and any direct physiological impacts. For instance, nasty odors can trigger the vagus nerve, a key part of the nervous system linking the brain and the gut, making one feel sick or nauseous. But the scientists behind that review ultimately concluded that more research into the physiological impacts of smells is needed to draw a clear-cut conclusions. Well, we're out of time, so if you feel that article was kind of interesting, I'll read more of it next Friday when I'm back with more world news from the BBC. Have a great day.